chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are right smack dab in the middle of it.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome this evening. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off. We're going to have the second hour here. We're going to have Stan Dale. We had him on the first hour. He's going to be joined by Dr. Fred Bell, who both are well-versed in UFOs and alien technology. And we're going to preface this with a little latest news and so forth. And Charlotte and I recorded this back on May 24, 2008, but it's still very timely, especially what's going on in the UFO situation now. We want you to go in, and when we talk about UFOs, Charlotte did an interview with Steve Allen. Go into YouTube and go click on Steve Allen UFO. And there's going to be, it's going to pop up, and there's two recordings there. There's one that was put up 6 years ago. Okay. And I want to tell you a little bit about that recording. When we first put it up 6 years ago, I put it up three different times, and they stepped on the audio. They didn't want the audio out 6 years ago. Today, that 9-minute interview is near perfect. So, when they changed over from, I was on Google exclusively then, and now it's a YouTube Google type of joint venture, the buyout. So, right now, the audio that supposedly they say was put up 6 years ago is okay, is perfect. But recently, the full interview was actually 32 minutes. And so if you put Steve Allen UFO in there, you're going to pop up. There's going to be two different interviews. It's the same interview, but one is a short interview of 9 minutes that Charlotte Littlefield did with Steve Allen. And then the other one is a full 32 to 33 minutes. I would go ahead and listen to the 32, 33-minute interview. He has some very important things to say. And what he witnessed back in 2008, January there, was a gigantic spacecraft. It was on a Friday. He went up to visit his friend that lived up on top of a hill that overview of the shallow valley there between Glen Rose and Stephenville. They were facing north, and off to their right would be Glen Rose, and further up to the northeast of Glen Rose was a Comanche peak power plant, Comanche Peak nuclear power plant, I should say. And then from to westward from Glen Rose, about 15 miles, was Stephenville, and you could see this from up atop this hill. And he and his long-term friend, who he went to school in the first grade, saw a gigantic spacecraft about a mile long and a half a mile wide come through very rapidly from east to west. And then it stayed stationary over Stephenville for a while. And then it had these funny lights, some vertical lights and horizontal lights. And then inside of a box, he said, by 50 yards high by about 150 yards wide, best he could estimate, there was a dirty-looking flame in there, and then all of a sudden, the spacecraft was gone. Well, that same spacecraft came back through that area being chased by F-16s later. And so he'll tell you, go ahead and listen to that. But it was really mystifying when we went up there about 2 weeks after the event to interview him. We drove into the parking lot, and there was Department of Defense car sitting in the parking lot, and I said, oh, what's that, you know? Well, we went in and interviewed him, and then Charlotte did this 32, 33-minute interview, And then we went back to Austin, and I got it set up, excellent audio and video, and we put it up, and they stepped on the audio three times. We invited Steve Allen to appear on the program three times, in fact, after that. The first time, he said he forgot. The second time, he was at emergency room. And the third time, he finally came on to our program. We were broadcasting that night from Brave New Books back in the back corner of the basement. And we not only had Steve Allen on there, but we brought Dr. Fred Bell on there that you're going to hear along with Stan Dale tonight on this rebroadcast. And anyway, we had Jim Mars was happened to be speaking at Brave New Books that night. He joined in with Dr. Fred Bell and Steve Allen, and we talked in depth about this particular sighting that occurred back in 2008 in Stephenville. There were hundreds of people that saw this. So it was definitely a viewing of a UFO, a gigantic one. Similar UFOs that were described in similar manners occurred up in Pennsylvania in the 80s, and I think in 88 or 87-ish, right during that period. So there were similar UFOs that did. So go ahead and view that. We also have other videos on the George Butler YouTube channel. So go in there and put George Butler in there. I'm going to make it a little bit easier to find. But you can find the Steve Allen UFO, you'll find my channel and then click in there, and that'll get you into a lot of other videos that we have up. We just wanted to repeat, we're going to Copenhagen on end of May. It will be there broadcasting on the 30th and 31st from Copenhagen, Denmark. The Bilderberg Group will meet there. There's rumblings that they might not be downtown at the Marriott Hotel there in downtown Copenhagen. But that remains to be seen. We've been getting some feedback here where they might be meeting somewhere else. I'm going to be getting some additional information on that. And we'll have that up on our website. Our website is WeThePeopleBilderberg.com. So I'd like for everyone in our listening audience to go in there and click off on the Chip Insight. And we certainly could use your contributions to get over there to Copenhagen and get this broadcast done. So go in there on WeThePeopleBilderberg.com. That'll pop up. And then go to the Chip Insight and give generously to help us get over there. We've virtually poured thousands of dollars into different events over the past, and this one we're going to need a little help to get over there. It's pretty expensive to fly into Denmark, and the expenses within Copenhagen are just astounding. Denmark itself is probably a model. One of the reasons why the Bilderberg Group is meeting there is that after studying the European Union and so forth and the different elements over there, the different countries, Denmark, it seems to be a model for sustainability and green projects and so forth. And so it is fitting right into the New World Order and especially the European Union as far as meeting the goals of what the movers and shakers wish to accomplish. The essence of the plan basically is to consolidate Europe, and they've been doing this since World War II. There's a group called Le Cercle. It's out of Europe. Jean Monnet was a member of that when he was still living. Jean Monnet was the driving force about the unification of the European countries, the separate countries into, it started out with coal and steel agreements under a common market. And then it has progressed now to a European Union and a European zone, which is the financial partners, of the European, Union. Denmark itself is still using the corona, so they haven't caved in totally. UK, United Kingdom, has not gone to the use of the euro. What has been going on over there is that Those countries that have converted over to the euro have lost control of creating money out of thin air, so to speak, from their national treasuries. And in essence, when they lost the ability to do that, then they couldn't inflate their currencies, inflate themselves out of financial, physical problems. So that's what you're seeing occur in those southern countries, in Greece and so forth, when they went to the European or the euro exclusively. Those countries that have stayed out of that have still maintained control of their own national treasuries, and so they have been able to so-called manipulate their own currencies to a certain degree. We've got the networks out here, and there was an article recently by Jeffrey Dickens on one of the blog sites, and he was looking at the amount of time spent on climate change versus the lowest learner contempt vote, and he's saying that this one network, okay, they spent more time on climate change, 27.5 minutes, and just about 15 seconds on Lois Lerner, the contempt vote. There was a contempt vote the end of this week, in the House, 231 to 178, concerning the IRS scandal. And said all the Republicans voted yes, with six Democrats even joining in, that they're holding Lerner in contempt for refusing to testify about the IRS's targeting of conservative groups. They're stating now that different investigations and different investigative journalists are stating there was 10% of the Tea Party groups that were looked at by IRS and audited and given a hard time of even qualifying and so forth. That's just entirely too many. Out of a select group like that to have been given problems in trying to become, you know what I mean, tax-free entities or and so forth, and qualify for the IRS exemptions under nonprofit organizations. Another little bit of news here that's very disturbing is Harvard will host reenactment of Satanic Mass. This comes out of CNS News, okay? And a Satanic Black Mass reenactment is scheduled to take place at Queen's Head Pub in the Memorial Hall at Harvard University on May 12th. That would be on Monday, with a mass performed by the Satanic Temple, which is being hosted for the event by the Harvard Extension Cultural Studies Group. Club. A non-consecrated communion host will be used in the reenactment, according to Lucian Greaves, spokesman for the Satanic Temple. While black masses are supposed to utilize a consecrated host, ours is merely representative of a consecrated host, Greaves told CNSnews.com. It is not consecrated. We neither believe in or invoke the supernatural, it says. So that's at Harvard. So that's a nice, nice little deal. Oh, Pelosi's out here going to these fundraisers and so forth on the West Coast that the president attended, and she missed some very, very important votes in Congress, and I think one of them was this contempt vote on Lois Lerner. So she's out there prancing around, you know, Nancy Pelosi, and missing some very, very important votes. And even John Kerry is being subpoenaed by ISA, Representative ISA. And he's saying now he will go ahead and respect the subpoena to testify before ISA's committee. So his oversight committee. And ISA has, Representative ISA has led the charge early on he's looked at this, Benghazi thing. It is a travesty of justice. For them trying to get out of this and to ignore it and to deny, the subpoenaing of certain documents, both John McCain and Lindsey Graham last week, last Thursday, week ago, they're the ones that launched this special investigation on Benghazi. Now, this is getting serious. A week ago, this last Thursday, they on the floor of the Senate announced the launching of an investigation and the convening and establishment of a select committee to look into Benghazi. This was created and by a recent release of an email that Judicial Watch forced out of the White House, and they were denying it to the committees and denying and stonewalling and so forth. This is all Obama's administration has been doing since they've been in office, and deny, 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 forget, forget, a stonewall, you know, deny, deny, and just continue to deny the ability of Congress to investigate some of these scandals. Now that this email was released, and it's about a 112-page document, actually, and embedded in this 112-page document is a very incriminating email talking about how the White House officials that were involved in this, this email was distributed to, were going to use this video, this very inflammatory video that came out of California, to use that as an excuse or as the source for the so-called group that supposedly materialized out in front of the consulate there in Benghazi and started, a protest movement that it resulted in 4 deaths and the burning of the consulate and so forth. So they put that forward knowing that that was a lie, but they wanted to use it as a cover story. Now some of your mainline journalists with ABC, they've got Carney in there, Press Secretary Carney in there now, and they're asking some hard questions. So this isn't going to just go away in just a short period of time. Now it looks like some of the mainline press and the big writers and columnists and reporters are beginning to say, hey, they've been lying to us. Carney's been out there lying, and we're going to go and start writing some stories on this and outing this. My idea is that since a week ago Thursday, there's been a chairman appointed, Gowdy. Trey Gowdy was appointed by the speaker. And then, in addition, this week, they actually voted for the creation of this select committee. So, from Thursday to the end of this week, Friday, McCain and so forth, and Lindsey Graham said, we're going to push this, we want this done, and by gosh, it was done. In less than a week, actually. So, this is moving fast, it's coming from a much higher level. I believe Obama has done a lot for the so-called New World Order and the top people there, but he has not moved on Iran. And I believe his failures in Libya also. They went in there and took out Gaddafi, but look what kind of a mess they've left there. So Hillary Clinton's foreign policy initiatives and so forth, and these things that she said that she's accomplished have been a total disaster, and on the face of her so-called accomplishments. So this has been a disaster for this country, for Libya, and for everyone concerned. Now they've launched this deal into Syria under her on her watch. It's beginning to be a debacle also. So the Obama administration is beginning to be looked at as an inept and administration that can't do anything right. The elitist, the financial people, the one world people, the new world order, the financial elitist are very sick and tired, I think, of this administration and their ineptness. That's why they're pushing McCain and these other senators to go in and get this select committee going. What they're going to try to accomplish is much what they did to Nixon or to actually let. I think Clinton is a better example of that. They took this charge, Lewinsky, Monica Lewinsky, and built it up, went into an impeachment proceedings and just knocked him around a little bit and got his attention, and then he started really obeying his New World Order people more. They had his attention after beating him around a little bit on the head and shoulders with these scandals in the Whitewater. They sent people in from London, journalists out of Washington, D.C. This is an old story now that we know. But I believe the same thing is going to occur this time. I believe that Obama is not responding to certain key issues, that especially the Israelis by way of the city of London and the Zionist lobby, coupled with AIPAC. Those people are very powerful, and they want to go after Iran and take their nuclear capability down. And so he hasn't done that. Netanyahu had wanted this for the full term during his first term. But Barack Obama went in with a lot of promises. He's even let down the liberal left that feels disappointed now. They're beginning to pull support away from him. And so his support that he had before is evaporating. I want to remind you to go into WeThePeopleBilderberg.com and to make a contribution. We'd love to have you on board with us as supporters. WeThePeopleBilderberg.com on the chip-in site. This is TheSecretTruth.com. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. But anyway, listen to this second hour, and I hope you enjoy it. And Stan Dale and Dr. Fred Bell, boy, I had some very interesting things to say. So thank you for being with us this evening, and God bless everyone out there.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with
Charlotte Littlefield Brown.
Well, that was quite a first hour, wasn't it, Charlotte?
Absolutely.
Okay, our guest for the second hour, and we're going to hold Stan Dale over also, but our second hour guest is Dr. Fred Bell. He became aware of and connected with MK Ultra at an early age. He later worked on many secret projects such as HAARP, Stargate, Montauk projects, and so forth. I don't think he actually worked on the HAARP, but he did work on some of these other projects. We had him comment one time on the Stephenville sightings, and he gave us some very insightful things. Welcome to our program, Dr. Fred Bell.
Hey, how are you guys doing tonight?
Boy, I tell you, welcome. We've got Stan Dale that has agreed to hold over during this second segment, hour, actually.
I would like to introduce you, gentlemen.
Yeah, Stan, this is Fred Bell. Fred Bell, Stan Dale.
How are you doing,
Fred?
Yeah, you wrote the Aquarian conspiracy book, right?
Cosmic
conspiracy.
I mean, cosmic, rather. Yeah, that's good. So, did you guys have fun on the first hour?
Well, we did. We've got that. Dr. Fred Bell has another program. And tell us a little bit about that program a second.
Well, we have one at bbsradio.com this Friday night now. Six to seven.
Okay.
Pacific time.
Okay.
And it's called Dr. Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. And now we also have a television thing going with it on the internet.
Oh, that's great.
So I get to show people stuff. Before I describe things, now I can actually show it to them, you know? It's kind of neat.
Yeah,
that's the way internet radio is going, you know, is TV, and it's high speed and everything.
Yes, it
sure.
is.
Yeah, it's really cool, yeah.
When did you write Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light?
It came out in 1999. Right at 2000. I got a new book called Inside Track that's coming out real soon. I'm working on it now as we speak.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, both of you gentlemen are doing important work and blazing a trail. You're way showers, you know, where you're taking us way into the future where we need to go.
Yeah, well, right now, unfortunately, there's so much resistance from the government and this fascism thing. I was just listening to your commercials and thinking, well, you know, the gas is like four something a gallon now. People still aren't doing anything sensible about it, and just one more. The more that these gas companies can get away with, and petroleum companies, the more that they're going to do. And they'll just keep pushing the price, probably past the European price zone. And there's no sense in that. But I mean, yeah, we need to change fuel, supplies. But you know, even the corn thing is a joke. Ethanol should be made from hemp plants, which are very efficient and produce oxygen. Corn produces a bunch of waste, which actually contributes to global warming and the higher carbon dioxide level when you burn the husks and get rid of the byproducts. So, I mean, conservation green theory thing is still completely upside down in my book, you know.
Dan, what do you say to that?
Well, I do feel that the biofuel approach to our problem is not the best answer. I think that we should eat corn rather than burn it. And when we take viable land for food now then and turn it into fuel, I think this is a serious mistake because we're already seeing tortilla or corn riots in Mexico and similar things down in South America and various leading countries down there. And we have weather that is changing. We are approaching a terrible time for our crop. So why do we want to burn our food in our cars? Let's go to electric. Let's use batteries. Let's cut back on what we're doing and get off of this. It'll take us years to do, but we needed to have started probably 30 years ago, I guess, Fred. Don't you agree?
Yeah, but there is a technology out there now that's viable, and that is where they actually take water and take your spark plug out, connect water to a small combustion chamber, looks like a spark plug, and it shoots hydrogen and oxygen into your engine, and you just have to make some timing changes. And that's available now, and your car can run on water. So they just have a guy that invented it recently. So
I'd like to hear more about off the air from you on that, because somebody sent me an email about that, and I just had a quick look online. I'm wondering, how in the heck does he get the energy to separate the hydrogen and oxygen? Where does that come from?
Well, you have to have a small amount of electricity to do it, but it's electrolysis, but not very much. It's not very much at all. We used to do that in the high school chemistry. We used to do electrolysis of water and produce oxygen and hydrogen.
Yeah, but
he found a way of doing it in a small spark plug-like structure that needs electricity, but the generator on the car, of course, will produce enough electricity to do that. It takes very little, you know.
When you say it will do that, what you're saying, in essence, is by doing it this way, we're not getting more energy out of the hydrogen than it took to separate it.
No,
however,
it doesn't take
anything
to separate it, hardly anything.
Well,
yeah.
The physics do say you have to, I mean, even if you take the energy from the alternator, or you have to use a finite amount of energy to break the molecular bonds.
Oh,
however,
yeah.
But what you're saying, though, I agree with. I see what he's saying now, because you're using that energy more efficiently, that fuel more efficiently than we use petroleum or gasoline.
Let's say for 10 watts, you can produce 100 watts of usable power. So you got 90% efficiency.
Isn't there a storage factor, whether you're talking about hydrogen or gasoline itself?
No, it's real time.
No, it's real time. Yeah.
Oh, no storage factor on this stuff. It's instantaneous.
I got one for you,
gentlemen.
But
there's an energy storage there, a possibility, I think, of something like that.
Yeah, I have a project I want to try to do this summer, and I'll run it by you two. Basically, I want to take it's going to be salted water with a small, very small portion of hydrochloric acid with the pulse electrical, and then I want to get a lawnmower running on hydrogen. And my understanding is that the nature of hydrogen it's heavier, it flows differently than gasoline, stuff like that. So you have to really adjust the combustion chamber.
No, just the timing.
Just the timing of how the compression.
To retard the timing.
Retard it. So when the piston blows it.
It generates more heat.
It's the opposite action. The gasoline blows the piston up, and this is going to suck it down. Is that right?
Oh, no. It's the same thing. It produces heat in the expansion chamber, in the combustion chamber.
So it's the same process.
But you set the fire off quicker because it ignites. Hydrogen ignites faster than gasoline.
Isn't it rocket fuel at some
point? So you retard it because it's a quicker burn than the gasoline. I see.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's going to go off quicker. I think it's like 10 degrees on most engines.
What does that do, Fred, what does that do to the heat released to the engine? Does it overload the radiator or not?
Oh, no. It runs cooler. Like alcohol. Alcohol runs a lot cooler, too. They use it for
really?
Race cars, but the problem is when a race car catches on fire, you can't see it. You get burned from it, but you don't see it because it's a cooler flame. But see, gasoline is so toxic that it burns in a red flame because it's burning all those. You're seeing the carbon burning, basically, that it's producing. You know, if you burn carbon at enough temperature, it produces a yellow flame, a really bright yellow and white flame, and that's why you see gasoline burning like that, especially if you explode it and you vaporize it. Then you get a big, big ball of fire.
Is this similar to what Brown did with his Brown's gas?
I'm not familiar with him.
Ah.
With you.
Well, another time we can discuss that. He's gone now. He was down in Australia, but I think a guy here in the States is doing the same thing now. They make, when they separate the hydrogen and oxygen, they do it in such a manner that it's not just H2 and O2. It's like HO or something like that, and it burns differently, and you can even put the flame on your hand and make water vapor, but you can turn that same flame onto a brick and melt it.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with that, but I do know that you can breathe the exhaust of a hydrogen generator. And you can also, because it's oxygen, pure oxygen, hydrogen combusts 100%. You know, when my dad worked for Henry Ford, you know, they made ethanol. And Henry Ford hated petroleum companies. And he had 12 cars, and it took him he had 18 acres of hemp plant. Because remember, hemp was a normal plant at the turn of the century. It produces four times more oxygen than a tree. So he had 18 acres that ran all 12 of his cars forever. My dad was there.
Well, I'll tell you what. Yeah,
that's the interim step to me, you know.
Okay, we got to cut away. Dr. Bell,
stuff's right around the corner.
Stan, we'll be right back. We've got to cut away. Be right back. Thank you.
More than you become, and I have found my feet 257 weeks. But you could be waiting for a day that won't come.
Count me in. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield Brown.
Yeah, welcome back, Dr. Fred Bell and Stan Dale. This is getting interesting, is it not?
Yeah, it really is.
Hey, gentlemen, I have a topic I would love to hear both of you discuss and go back on. Actually, it's in the realm of, I suppose, mythology. A lot of people would consider it mythology, but it's the legends of Atlantis and how they're affecting our world today.
Well, Fred, you got anything on that?
Well, I got quite a bit, but you go ahead and go first.
Well, I wrote a book called The Vindicator Scrolls. It's out of print now, but in there I found what I'm pretty certain is the location for the sunken part of it in the Persian Gulf near Abu Ali. I took it to the Cousteau Foundation before Gulf War I, and I was sitting on the Alcyone with the captain. We were making plans of what it would cost us to put divers from Europe over there to go down and investigate, because they were keenly interested in it as well. And it was going to cost us, I think, $2 million a week just to feed and fly the equipment supplies back and forth to the Calypso there in the Persian Gulf. So it definitely was affecting, you know, modern efforts, you know, when I told Cousteau's people. But Gulf War I erupted, and they blocked us out of the Persian Gulf. And then when they put the bubble mines into the floor of the Persian Gulf, it meant that we might be able to trigger one of them by accident with the Calypso, and it put a bubble up amidships and just break it in half. And they just couldn't afford to replace it. So we put it on hold, and then, of course, people died and things changed. But there's been stuff found at Bahrain about 100 feet down, probably more than 30 years ago, and the sheikh in control of the area stopped the European guys from digging any further because it was more advanced technology than at 80 feet, and more advanced technology than they found in the jars in Iraq in the museum there that produced electric power. Fred, go.
Yeah, the Leyden jars. Well, I know that Poseidon, I think, was back over in out in Bimini in that area at one time, and I know they had a scalar wave. The technology they had was scalar wave warfare back about 12,495 B.C., and the scalar waves, there was a war between the priests and the of the different kingdoms and I guess the people that actually control them. It's kind of like an uprising against the Bush administration, if we had one public here.
A modern day version, right?
Yeah, modern day version. They use scalar wave warfare, and they created this vortex from it, and that created the Bermuda Triangle. And still there today, and I think that if you remember, Methuselah lived back in those days, and he lived 450 years. They had a much longer lifespan than we do now, and I think that they set up a frequency on the planet that affected our DNA and shortened our lifespan to a lousy 100 years. I mean, 100 years is a joke. You got 10 decades, you know, to
I thought that it was the removal of the water canopy we had, the huge water vapor thing that was shielding us from the ultraviolet that shortened our lifespan.
Well, it's partly that, but, you know, when you're in a high frequency, ultraviolet actually feeds your energy field. You can actually get more life extension out of it. Butterflies, for example, see into ultraviolet, whereas bees see in the infrared. Ultraviolet has life extending qualities. If your frequency
depends on
is
what,
high enough,
what,
your pH
what bandwidth
level.
Though, doesn't it?
Huh?
Doesn't it depend on what bandwidth in the ultraviolet spectrum you're talking about?
The body likes about 402 nanometers. And that's the frequency that we use in a light generator and one of the Apollo light systems that we sell to take away depression. Because if you don't have 402 nanometers of light, it's a dark purple, you start becoming, your serotonin levels become unbalanced and people become very depressed. In fact, they had the cancel coming on my show the other night, the president of the company, because it just got bought up by North American Philips. Because the FDA, they have to be very careful what they say, because the FDA is all over them now, because it's hurting the drug company with Effexor, Paxil, you know, Zanolin, all these different drugs that are out that really don't help you with depression. It just moves it from one form of mood to another. So I'm right. This is one of the areas that I'm pretty keyed into right now, you know, is the ultraviolet and how it works on the body. I've seen it work. But, I mean, the way that the way they present it in the world, it's like something bad. Well, naturally, if it's something good, they're going to present it as something bad. Ultraviolet UV rays will destroy, synthetics. They'll destroy rubber and that kind of stuff, and they'll screw your skin up if you can't process it. Most people can't process it, so it has to be regulated, obviously, not by the government, but by the amount of exposure, because people are not high enough in frequency to process it. You have to process it. Once you can process it, you can handle all you want.
Plus, for nutrient deprived, I think you need a lot of vitamin A or whatever the derivatives are.
Yeah, vitamin A is very important for processing light. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, Dr. Bell and Stan, what about the sun right now? Has it changed in its constituencies of its characteristics, and is it in a dangerous state right now or stage?
In 1992. The sun started emitting two new spectral bandwidths in the ultraviolet region. And I talked to the Air Force at one of the bases that were monitoring at the Ionospheric Research Center in Australia. We were down there. And they had been giving lectures about it to kind of soft pedal it. And the research done here in the United States in Arizona at the Heliospheric Center at the university there, they found that there was a certain type of phytoplankton in the southern hemisphere in the oceans around the southern side of Australia that were absorbing this new set of bandwidth and were multiplying and absorbing the heat instead of letting it reflect back off, which was warming the oceans. So they didn't think the ultraviolet would be harmful in that particular spectrum, but that indicated that the formula that physicists thought the sun ran by was not correct. And everybody went back to the drawing board, the blackboard, trying to figure out why the sun started emitting this frequency. The Russians said it was because we'd already burned over 50% of the hydrogen fuel, and the sun could go to the next stage to become a helium star. Now, what we're seeing is some very erratic activity coming from the sun, and if you just simply look at the data plotted from the last 150 years, you will see that the oceans have been warming up, the rain has been increasing on the planet because of the boil-off, you know, the heating. And even the Hopi nation that we were there visiting with them, they told us that they expect the sun to get extremely hot, so hot it will be unbearable to live outside for several weeks, maybe months, while it goes through a stage and burns trees and grass, which agrees with the Book of the Revelation as well. So, yeah, I think the sun is doing some pretty weird stuff that we can see in the data, even changing its diameter slightly.
Yeah, Dr. Bell, what's your readout on the sun right now?
Well, I wrote about this back in 99. What happens is if you look at the planetary alignment, right? There's a thing called the Jupiter effect where all the planets line up in line at some point. And so each one of these planets has a particular vibratory frequency that it emits, it's natural, that feeds back into the sun, which gives a consciousness to the hydrogen fusion reaction.
Okay, we've got to cut away. We'll pick that up on the first part of the next segment.
You got it. Has resulted...
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with...
Charlotte Littlefield Brown.
Welcome back, Fred Bell and Stan Dale. And what were you saying, Fred, about the sun now, about these resonant planets?
What happened was... When the Grays, the Theta Reticulans made a comment once upon a time that the the Earth's auric frequencies is attuned to the growth resistant generation, and the Earth, you know, the auric field of a human being created by the electrolysis of the brain and transmission down through the central nervous system creates an electrical field, and you summate that, you get a big negative field. And so what happens is during the Jupiter effect, is with more and more people taking incarnations, we're at like 8 billion or so, it throws a big standing wave out into the Jupiter effect, which then goes down into the sun, creating much bigger solar flares. And I also know for a fact that the solar flares, when they come up, bigger than they are, they travel at about a million miles per second, and they come back here, and they come through the Van Allen radiation belt, where they're filtered and slowed down, but they gain mass, and they turn into what's called the auric electrojet, which then comes down through the North Pole of the Earth, down across the equator, creating tectonic changes in the earthquakes, and down through the bottom, blowing out the ozone layer. And because the Earth's humanity is so disharmonious with everything we do with fossil fuel and everything we do is wrong with nature, we created these standing waves down in the sun, which is like stirring the cauldron of the hydrogen-helium fusion reaction, which is going to create a lot of isotopes chemically that we don't want, which is therefore going to create a lot of different radiations that science is now measuring. And I wrote about that back, 8 years ago. That was happening. I'm much more into it now than I was then. So that's my take on that, for what it's worth.
Stan, what is your comments on that, particular assertions?
Well, it's kind of out of my area of expertise, I'm afraid. I've heard of the auric jets. I've seen pictures of them. But as to why they form, I really haven't investigated that. Just haven't got the time.
Right. In your cosmic conspiracy book, you were saying that the Majestic 12 group has been taken over by a new group. When did that occur? Is that still ongoing or what?
Yeah, that occurred in the late 70s. We have, I'm pretty sure, a replacement group, but they don't have control of all the assets that we had underground and under the ice cap because the visitors from the parallel or concentric universe, the aliens, if you wish, but the ones that created us or were part of that group, they've taken over everything. They have their own agenda, and they just let us build infrastructure and then took it over. But
I totally agree with that.
Pardon?
I said I totally agree with that.
Look, our guys, I got to tell you, everybody gets mad because why weren't we told a lot of these things? And
I've been in those places. I went to 3,000 companies. I've been in those underground places. I've seen some of this stuff.
Well, you know then that it wasn't done to hurt people or to disinform them. It was done in a wild effort to try to beat these guys.
Exactly. Tell me about it. I was in that thing that was in that deal at the Marriott Hotel in Washington, D.C. back in the 60s. Nobody even knew it existed. They only found it in like the 70s and 80s. I was out there in Colorado. I was at the Atomic Energy Commission. I was in Amarillo, Texas. I went into a lot of underground stuff. I used to work underground for the government. I did it for 20 years. I had a top secret clearance. Believe me, I know. I know what you're talking about. People can't imagine the size of those underground facilities. That Barry Goldwater test site up there along Highway 10 between Arizona and California is huge. Huge. Thousands of people work in there. Thousands.
Well, I've had people tell me, oh, well, look, they couldn't do tunnels like that, and I had to go over and dig up some of the old photos and stuff of the 42-foot diameter German tunnel borer and the patent
for
the nuclear one, and they just haven't got a clue.
Oh, they're bigger than that now, and the new ones run on fusion. They have a fusion process. It's similar to the plasma laser, and they don't even have to put supports in the tunnels anymore. And then these new ones can go a mile a day with about a 40 or 50 foot circle, a mile a day, and they don't even have to support it because it goes into fusion and creates super hot temperatures. And just makes a melted glass.
Yeah, it breaks it. It fractures the formation from the heat, and it pushes the magma out into, like, fingers, fractures out and fills them with that molten glass. The guys
exactly.
that invented that, or the team, are down in Los Alamos. They patented it from there.
Yeah, no, I've been to Los Alamos. I've worked there. You're totally right.
You know what I'm talking
that.
About. Yeah, that's a marvelous machine.
Yeah, no, it is.
Well, where is this all going to end, gentlemen? I mean, are we going to... Is this part of the Illuminati-type plan, or are they trying to protect us from these threats? Or what is this? What's the bottom line on all of this? Do you have a, idea or opinion on this?
Or a crystal ball?
Yeah, crystal ball. Thank you, Charlotte. I was going to say that, Charlotte.
What do you reckon, Fred?
Well, you know, it's creeping fascism. Ever since they hooked the bankers came over here, you know, started with Hitler before that even. They funded World War II, you know. Then they come over here, started the Federal Reserve System. Now they're putting in the fascism. People that don't play, they want to get rid of them. People that play become slaves. It's real simple. That's how I see it. That's how they want to do it. And believe me, the military bases they've been closing surface bases. They closed El Toro out here by me. They're all going underground, just in case there is a little bit of confrontation with the aliens, you know. They're prepared for it. The people on the surface, they haven't got a clue. They have not got a clue of what's going on. They're not even 1% into what's going on. I remember when they started the Hague Kissinger depopulation policy back in the 60s, where they started using chemicals like the Vietnam War with Agent Orange, started experimenting on people to get rid of them, you know, to just wipe people out.
Was that part of the eugenics movement in general, or sort of a facet of it or something?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge orchestrated thing. You know, now what they're doing, and this is what I've been working on a lot, and I'm working on, I covered the 149 subprojects of MKUltra, put those out there. Now what I've found out is they're using neurophone technology, like you hear voices in your head. They're beaming it on the people. They're selecting people from the various spying on the internet, spying on the different, you know, telephone conversations with your receiver on the hook. You know, you can hear 20 feet away, even with a receiver on the hook, and then they're profiling people. They're sending these beams down. They're making them go crazy. They're filling them full of drugs. All the drugs have basic elements of PCP, which is basically cyclohexane, and papiridine, which eventually causes you to go crazy and produce homicidal ideation, you know, things where you want to kill yourself, people around you, and they start legislating away the constitutional freedoms. And we're pretty much in a martial law right now. We're pretty much there. Our habeas corpus.
Yeah, what are your comments?
We've lost pretty much everything. People don't realize it.
Yeah.
But when they start getting in trouble or get too far out, and they're just waiting to see how much the populace will allow to happen before they go after you and Charlotte and me and Sam. They won't come after us until the populace is pretty much surrendered. So we'll be the last ones that they try to bring down. But that's what's going on. It's called fascism.
Stan, what do you think about those statements there? What could you add to that?
Oh, gosh, George. Look, I from my exposure inside the group, it's a little different than what Fred's talking about. I line up more with the ancient Hebrew and the Semitic discussions of the Sumerian gods, if you wish, the fallen ones that were kicked out. And there's a conflict occurring in the upper levels of the heavens. And when they came through the gates down here, they were cast down here. There are going to be a lot more of them arriving shortly through these gates. But it's a conflict resolution. And the whole reason that the Adam man was set up and allowed to breed and multiply across the face of the earth and to break from the consciousness that they used to be connected with God, was so that a virtual courtroom could be set up here to try running this virtual courtroom like they want to run their level of the universe where they are. And it was a challenge to the authority there. And so instead of having a war there, they were having it here in this virtual courtroom, a virtual battleground. And this is not far-fetched because we're seeing the discussions like this in the Pentagon already.
I'm totally with you on that, too. You just take it to a higher level, you know?
Yeah,
right. I agree 100%.
So, yeah, well, and so, you know, from what I've been able to determine, I'm certainly not, you know, the world's authority, but I did go into the Hebrew and some of the ancient texts and things, and what I found is that there's going to be a happy ending to this, but before there is, there's going to be a huge confrontation here on Earth between what people would normally think are aliens, but these are the sons of God, if you wish, from the ancient days that rebelled against the rest of the sons of God up there.
Okay.
And, I totally agree with
that. We've got to cut away. We'll be right back.
Get a grip.
The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with
Charlotte Littlefield Brown.
Welcome back, Stan Dale and Dr. Fred Bell. Was Stan, did you have the floor?
I think he did, yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
had
Stan,
a lot of floor here.
Yeah, finish up your thoughts there on what you were talking about. Yeah, what were they?
Sorry, during the break, I got to face
that on the break.
Boy, y'all have a lot of thoughts tonight going, don't you?
Good show, man.
I know. We got to keep it going.
what were we talking about? Yeah,
the semantic, the Hebrew, semantic.
Yeah, the Hebrew. You approached it from a Hebrew viewpoint.
Yeah, I found an interesting thing. Because I was slow in Hebrew, I developed a way to translate it words piece by piece from the ancient writings, and in the process I discovered some rather incredible things about the tales that people accept, like the Exodus and stuff like that, where we're talking though about the burning flaming thing on top of a mountain and stuff, and how the Exodus occurred. Anyway, to make a long story short, I found a different way to translate the Hebrew, and when I do it, I get maybe 30 to 35 times more in English than they do in the English version of the Bible. A great deal of stuff, the stuff that's just not known. And I took it to a couple of rabbis I was studying with, and I said, "Hey, look what I've done here. Please check it out. This can't be right." And it took about 4 hours, and then suddenly the rabbi I was talking with got up and danced around the room, and suddenly he realized what I was saying, and he said, "This is incredible." He said, "Show me how you did that." And so I did, and he said, "Look, you are telling us things that they only sing in the yeshiva, in the rabbi schools. We never write it down, and you're telling us secret knowledge from the Torah, and you're doing it by translating." I said, "Well, yeah, I guess so." He said, "Look, the way you're doing it might have 15% error in it, something like that." But he said, "Hey, you're uncovering heaps of stuff." And then they started to share with me some of the things that they don't write down, and this is why, Fred, that I've got that slightly diametric view about, like, the rapture, for instance. Because of what we learned together from the Torah and the hidden things that just could not possibly have been screwed up by translators because they didn't even know it was there.
No, I think you're brilliant, what you're doing. I think you're brilliant. I really respect you, and I just met you tonight. What do you think of the Ark of the Covenant? What do you think of that? That energy's coming back. It's on the History Channel, the Indiana Jones. What do you think about that? Have you played around the scripture on that very much?
I have indeed, yes.
I want to hear that.
Okay, well, first of all, the Indiana Jones stories were written by a guy that was actually a digger in one of my friends, family friends' caves over in the Qumran. Dr. Vendel Jones, and of course he hated to be called Vindy or Wendy obvious reasons there, but anyway. That's where Indy Jones came from, because that guy left and went to Hollywood and wrote the stories. But anyway, in the caves over there, Dr. Jones and I, the real Dr. Jones, were looking in cave, I think it was 15, anyway, the Wadi Hakipa next to the Kibbutz Kalia. And there, hidden underneath, when the sun shines through the top cave, through a hole in the top, like a fryer's ball spot, at between 11 and 1, it puts a spot on the white, kind of sandy material, but it's like a powder on that cave floor. And if we dug there, which we did, we opened up a secret chamber for the priests of Zadok could worship. And we thought maybe that the Ark of the Covenant would be down there. And when we got into the chamber, huge, beautiful river-rolled Jordan rocks that were about a foot in diameter, mortared together with water from the Dead Sea and various other materials to make mortar. And the gypsum had leached out and made beautiful crystals like diamonds all over between the rocks. And it was just wonderful to see in the flickering light down there. But anyway, the Ark wasn't there. So then Jonesy and I started talking about the copper scrolls and how they might have been coded. And Jonesy said to me, "Look, let me show you." He said, "We couldn't get our hands on the scrolls because they're over in Jordan locked up there. But the drawings and tracings of them have survived by the guy who originally found them."
Right.
And he said, "Do you remember how the Babylonians used to pass secret messages in the battlefield?" And I said, "No, I wasn't around then, Jonesy, but tell me."
Yeah.
He said, "Well, they would take round cylinders of clay, and they would press a message into this cylinder of seal, but they would press harder for the things they wanted to pass to their generals and lighter for stuff they didn't want to show the generals, the enemy, if they intercepted this cylinder. And they would take this cylinder and pass it to the generals in the field. They would take a flat piece of wet clay and roll the cylinder. And if they rolled it hard enough, the real message came out and the other message got all mucked up. But it was the raised or indented letters that you were to read, or the maps. And
right.
This is the way the copper scrolls were done."
Wow.
It sounds like an offset process almost.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, in the sixth, I think it's the sixth page or the sixth part of the scroll that's sewn in there, I was able to see right in the middle of the Hebrews, I was reading right to left like you're supposed to, there was Greek all of a sudden. One word of Greek written backwards, or like you and I would normally read frontwards, and it was K-E-N. And when you said it, it was Kohen, and it was like the high priest. And that word, because it stood out and it was even physically different than all the letters around it, and it had Greek in it, you know, epsilon, that word showed us that the secret was raised. You know, high priest, raised priest. The priest even had a signet ring that had that same kind of thing going on the top of the engravings in it. So then we knew that we could take the tracings, put them into Photoshop, and start looking at the distorted letters, the fat ones versus the thin ones, and the little incidental scratches that seemed to have been, you know, artifacts. And those were maps and things. And we were looking for the great treasure, not for silver and gold, but for the Aaron HaKodesh, the Ark of the Covenant. And,
wow.
Oh, look, I've been on that trail for years. It's good.
Yeah, no, we got to do a documentary. You're hot. You know, you're into some real cool stuff.
When Dr. Bell says that, you are.
Yeah, believe me. I'm impressed with me. You know, I want him on my show. I'm going to steal your guest from my show.
I'm his, really I'm his right. agent now.
Yeah, there you go. Now you're the agent.
I'll tell you what, it's been an interesting life, guys. Interesting life.
It is. I love it. You're in my fantasy world now with this stuff. Stuff I don't have time to look into. You've been all over the place.
Look, we got to the point over there in the Middle East of that dig where we were thinking, if we break through this chamber and the Ark is there, we can't look at it. And it might have a charge building up on it, so we were figuring out how to rig cables and run them down the hill past the kibbutz down into the Dead Sea to ground us.
Does the Ark supposed to have a tremendous charge on it, like a capacitor or what? What is that about?
As far as we could tell, it's something like that.
But
it said in the Bible that God has his Ark of the Covenant where he is, near the throne, and then there's this Ark of the Covenant he had Moses with. A communicating device that communicates not only intelligence or voice, but vision and solid materials and energy. It's a capacitive device. It's tuned. You know, it's just a tuned cavity resonator that's tuned to the frequencies that, at the time anyway, God was using. So I don't know.
Do the secret societies have the Ark in their possession, or are they still searching themselves?
I'm not certain. I am pretty sure at this point that the Ark of the Covenant is buried in stone, 20,000-pound blocks around it, underneath. Or just right behind the Wailing Wall, because I've been back in behind there, and they locked off one tunnel after Lambert Dolphin, Dr. Dolphin from Stanford Research, went in with his crew. He was arrested when they were trying to do ground-penetrating radar through that stone into that chamber. We think that before the Babylonian captivity, that the priests knocked the stompers out from under the two great pillars, their Boaz and Jachin, and then sand fell down like in the pyramids, and because they came from a history of building pyramids, and this sand caused these huge stones to close in around the whole Ark of the Covenant and all the stuff that was there from the tabernacle of the wilderness and folded up in the Holy of Holies site. And so all of that is hidden behind there, but we can't go in there now because it irritates the Muslims who have the Dome of the Rock and Al-Aqsa Mosque sitting on top of it. And, you know, that's why Nimrod Novik arrested Dr. Dolphin, it is such a story. I think it's there, and it's been hidden there for a long time, and I think the Jeremiah account, which puts it on Mount Nebo, was a red herring to throw,
diversion.
The Babylonians off.
Yeah, diversion of some kind.
Yeah.
Yeah, my feeling is that it hasn't been discovered yet because there would be a big breakthrough in technology that we don't have. You'd see it somehow or other.
You think that's what it's about? It's about some high technology that...
some resonance. There's got to be some magical resonance stuff, some really trick stuff that we don't know about in that technology. It's a pure source. You know, the greatest scientific machines work on the simplest principles.
Okay, well, that's our exit music. We want to, again, reiterate that this program is dedicated to your dad, Stan Deo, Harold Stanley Deo Sr., fine gentleman from what I could read, and of course, you knew him intimately and loved him so much. He passed away a couple of years ago, so we're dedicating this program to your dad tonight.
Much appreciated. I'm sure we certainly
thank you, Stan Deo, and Dr. Fred Bell. We also thank you for coming in and having this discussion with us. We're out there to try to get the truth, And Charlotte Brown, you, boy, you made some good contributions too.
Well, thanks, guys. Gentlemen, it was a pleasure. It's just an absolute honor to be on here with you and to listen to you to have your discussion.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Charlotte.
And good night. Light a little candle. Light a little candle, everybody. We love y'all. Good night.